Welcome to XY Files podcast. I'm Vladimir Kotlev, MD, the founder of Vidma, with a medical background in urology and deep expertise in male hormone optimization and fertility. This is episode 12 of 18 in our low testosterone series. Last time we covered obesity metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes, the low testosterone triangle. Today we're getting into low testosterone and depression, other linked risks. In the last episode, the big idea was that low testosterone often travels with obesity, insulin resistance, and type 2 diabetes. Not because testosterone explains every metabolic problem, and not because fixing testosterone suddenly cures diabetes, but because the whole system is connected. Today, we widen the frame. Once a man truly has hypogonadism, not just a bad lab day, what else tends to show up with it? Mood symptoms, bone loss, muscle loss, fears about the prostate, questions about heart safety, sleep apnea confusion, sometimes even genetic conditions that change the whole plan. Most men get this wrong in one of two directions. They either blame testosterone for everything, or they dismiss it as just a sex hormone. Both are too simple. Low testosterone is not just a sexual health issue, but it is also not diagnosed by vibes. Before we talk about depression or bone or any of the rest, the diagnostic rule has to come first, because everything downstream depends on it. Male hypogonadism is a clinical syndrome. It requires both persistent symptoms and biochemical deficiency. A low number alone is not a diagnosis. Symptoms alone are not enough either. We use morning testing from 7 to 11. We care about total testosterone, but we prioritize free testosterone because high SHBG can hide a real deficiency when total testosterone looks acceptable. At Vidma, we measure free testosterone directly with equilibrium dialysis and LC-MS-MS. We do not play guessing games with SHBG calculations. Our thresholds, when symptoms persist, are 350 nanograms per deciliter for total testosterone and 100 picograms per milliliter for free testosterone. And then the part many clinics still skip. LH and FSH must be measured alongside testosterone, always. High LH with low testosterone points to primary hypogonadism, meaning the testes are failing. Low or normal LH with low testosterone points to secondary or functional hypogonadism, meaning the brain is not signaling properly and the testes may still be capable of producing testosterone. If LH is below 8 and the pattern fits secondary or functional hypogonadism, enclomiphene is usually the first treatment to consider. If LH is high and the testes are not responding, enclomiphene is not going to rescue that situation. The mistake I see almost every week is a man shows up with one afternoon testosterone result. No free testosterone, no LH, no FSH, and someone has already started talking about injections. Maybe, maybe not. Last month, a guy in his early 40s came in with low motivation, lower libido, poor recovery in the gym, and that flat-feeling men often call brain fog, because nobody enjoys saying, "I feel vaguely miserable." His total testosterone was not dramatic, borderline. On proper morning testing, his free testosterone was clearly low, LH was low normal, and the pattern fit functional hypogonadism. Very different conversation, very different treatment path. Now, mood. When men say depression, they often mean several overlapping things. Low mood, yes, but also fatigue that never really lifts. Less drive, more irritability, emotional flattening, the sense that your internal engine is turning over, but not well. The Endocrine Society guideline includes mood symptoms as part of the clinical picture of hypogonadism. It also makes an important point. Mood symptoms are not specific enough to diagnose it. That matters, because poor sleep can look like depression. Sleep apnea can look like depression. Chronic illness can look like depression. Burnout can look like depression. True depressive disorders can absolutely coexist with low testosterone. The human body, annoyingly, refuses to file everything into one neat folder. When I was a resident, I used to think that if a man's testosterone was low enough, fixing the number would fix the mood. I was wrong. Mood is messier than lab medicine wants it to be. The evidence fits that reality. A meta-analysis in JAMA Psychiatry found that testosterone treatment improved depressive symptoms in hypogonadal men, especially when the depressive symptoms were milder. That is clinically useful. It suggests that when low mood is part of a broader hormonal syndrome, along with sexual symptoms, reduced vitality, and body composition changes, correcting the deficiency can help. Men often describe it less as, "My depression was cured," and more as, "I feel like myself again." But the larger TRAVERSE program did not support testosterone as an effective treatment for most men with clinical depressive disorders. That is also clinically useful. It tells us not to oversell what hormones can do. So the practical message is this: if a man has documented hypogonadism and the low mood seems tied to that larger picture, treatment may improve mild depressive symptoms. If he has major depression, severe anxiety, suicidal thinking, or persistent psychiatric illness, he still needs standard mental health care. Testosterone is not a replacement for a psychiatrist or a therapist. It is not a shortcut around the real work of treating depression. This is also where treatment selection matters. If the axis is intact and the problem is secondary or functional hypogonadism, especially with LH below 8, enclomiphene is often the first-line option. It works by blocking estrogen feedback at the hypothalamus, which increases GnRH, LH, and FSH, and stimulates the testes to produce testosterone naturally. That preserves spermatogenesis, fertility, and testicular function. If LH is already high and the testes are failing, pushing the brain to yell louder does not help much. You can press the gas pedal harder, but if the engine is gone, the car is still not leaving the driveway. The next linked risk is one men almost never think about until they have to: bone. I used to think bone health was something men only cared about after retirement, usually because another doctor brought it up. Then you meet men with severe testosterone deficiency and low trauma fractures, and it changes how you look at the issue. Bone loss in hypogonadism is real, and it is not limited to very old men. Severe testosterone deficiency is associated with bone loss and osteoporosis, independent of age. The association is weak when deficiency is mild. It gets much stronger when testosterone is profoundly low. Bone is living tissue. It is constantly remodeling. Testosterone supports bone directly, and in men, some testosterone is converted to estradiol, which also matters for bone maintenance. Men have estradiol too, and their bones care about it quite a bit. When androgen exposure falls enough, for long enough, bone turnover shifts in an unfavorable direction. Over time, bone density drops. That may not produce symptoms until a fracture happens, which is part of why it gets missed. The evidence here is more encouraging than many people realize. The testosterone trials showed improved bone mineral density and estimated bone strength, especially at the lumbar spine. Several meta-analyses support a positive effect on bone density as well. That is good. The catch is that better bone density is not the same thing as proven fracture prevention. We do not yet have strong enough fracture data to say testosterone treatment alone clearly prevents fractures. So if a man is high risk for fracture or already has osteoporosis, standard bone treatment still matters. Testosterone correction is supplementary when true hypogonadism is present. It is not a substitute for full osteoporosis management. Most of the bone data, just to be clear, comes from TRT studies because that is what has been studied for decades. At VIDMA, when a man has low or normal LH and fits secondary or functional hypogonadism, we usually start with enclomiphene, not TRT, because it preserves fertility and has a lower hematocrit risk. But the diagnostic principle stays the same: confirm the syndrome, classify the cause, then treat intelligently. The muscle story is more visible, so men notice it sooner. Testosterone helps maintain lean mass. Men with deficiency often tell me the same cluster of things. They recover more slowly from workouts, they lose muscle more easily, they gain fat more easily, their exercise tolerance feels worse. The same effort gets less return. If you've ever had a car that still runs, but feels like it lost 30 horsepower for no obvious reason, that description is not terrible.
The evidence is fairly consistent that testosterone treatment in hypogonadal men increases lean mass and reduces fat mass. That part is real. But body composition and physical function are not the same thing. The testosterone trials showed improvements in body composition and only modest effects on walking distance. Large functional improvements, especially in older men, are less reliable. In plain English, treatment can improve the biological setup for strength. It cannot replace training. One of my patients said he wanted treatment to make him feel 25 again. I told him being 25 also involved bad sleep, cheap beer, and questionable judgment, so we should be selective about what we try to recreate. What treatment can do is restore some of the anabolic potential that hypogonadism takes away. But resistance training is still the stimulus that turns that potential into real-world strength and performance. Medicine helps. The gym still has a job. This also ties back to our last episode. In functional hypogonadism driven by obesity or metabolic disease, lifestyle changes can raise testosterone a bit, but usually not dramatically. Often, it is only around 1 to 2 nanomoles per liter, and much of the lost weight is regained over time. That is why, in symptomatic men with low or normal LH, enclomiphene plus lifestyle modification is often the most sensible first-line approach. You correct the biology while also working on the factors that suppressed it in the first place. Then we get to a category that has collected a lot of mythology over the years: urinary symptoms and prostate cancer. I still hear some version of this almost weekly. If testosterone goes up, won't my prostate go crazy? No, that is not what modern evidence shows. Randomized evidence does not show meaningful worsening of lower urinary tract symptoms with testosterone therapy in appropriately selected men. A meta-analysis in European Urology found no significant worsening compared with placebo, and some storage symptoms may even improve. There is less evidence in men who start with very severe urinary symptoms, because those men were often excluded from trials. That is a limitation of the data. It is not proof that testosterone is harmful. The prostate cancer issue is similar. The old idea that appropriately prescribed testosterone automatically feeds prostate cancer has not held up well in modern randomized data. The AUA guideline, systematic reviews, and the TRAVERSE trial do not show increased prostate cancer risk in men without active or advanced disease. At the same time, active or advanced prostate cancer remains a contraindication to TRT. Both statements are true. Nuance survives, even when headlines do not. This is one reason I prefer careful monitoring over drama. Men age 40 and older should have PSA included in the workup. At VIDMA, that is part of the panel. If a man also has erection or urinary symptoms, and the hormonal pattern fits secondary hypogonadism, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet can be a very practical option. Again, tailored to the biology, not a one-size-fits-all script. Heart safety deserves its own minute, because it has produced years of confusion. For a long time, the cardiovascular question was driven by small, conflicting studies. Then, the TRAVERSE trial, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, gave us much stronger data. About 5,246 men with hypogonadism and either established cardiovascular disease or elevated cardiovascular risk were followed for an average of 33 months. TRT was non-inferior to placebo for major adverse cardiovascular events, meaning heart attack, stroke, or cardiovascular death. That is an important finding. it means current evidence does not support the claim that appropriately prescribed TRT broadly increases heart attack or stroke risk in hypogonadal men. But non-inferior does not mean harmless. Traverse also showed more atrial fibrillation, more pulmonary embolism signal, and more acute kidney injury signal in the testosterone group. So, a man with a history of blood clots, rhythm problems, or kidney disease needs a more careful discussion. And one more detail that often gets missed. Traverse studied gel-based TRT, not injections. You should be cautious about assuming the exact same safety profile applies to every testosterone regimen. And since we just spent an episode talking about diabetes, it is worth saying out loud. Testosterone is not a diabetes treatment. Correcting hypogonadism may help some men feel and function better, but TRT alone does not prevent or treat type 2 diabetes. Sleep apnea is another place where men get tripped up because symptoms overlap so much.
Poor sleep, fatigue, low mood, lower libido, worse concentration, more body fat, all of that can come from sleep apnea, low testosterone, or both. A lot of men assume it has to be one or the other. In practice, it often isn't. Current evidence does not show that testosterone causes persistent obstructive sleep apnea. One placebo-controlled trial in men with severe sleep apnea found a temporary reduction in oxygen saturation early in treatment, around 7 weeks, but that effect was not present later. So, sleep apnea is not an automatic reason to avoid treating hypogonadism. It is a reason to treat both conditions in parallel when both are present. The more predictable safety issue with TRT is erythrocytosis, which means the hematocrit goes up. That is the most common adverse effect of testosterone therapy. It usually becomes evident within 3 to 12 months. Once the hematocrit rises above about 54%, everyone gets more cautious. Management can be straightforward: dose adjustment, changing formulation, or venesection when needed, but it has to be watched. This is one of the reasons I am not casual about unsupervised treatment. The follow-up labs are not busy work, they are part of the treatment itself. At Vidma, our medical team repeats labs after the first month, then every 6 months. We look at total testosterone by LC-MS-MS, free testosterone by equilibrium dialysis with LC-MS-MS, LH, FSH, estradiol, CBC, comprehensive metabolic panel, vitamin D, PSA if age 40 or older, insulin if BMI is over 25, and when the situation calls for it, lipids, prolactin, or TSH. It is a real workup, not a single number and a sales pitch. One more linked category is less common, but it changes everything when it shows up: genetic causes. Klinefelter syndrome is the most common genetic cause of male hypogonadism, affecting roughly 1 in 500 to 1,000 male births, and many men are never diagnosed. These men often have primary hypogonadism, infertility, and sometimes cognitive or psychosocial features that were never connected back to a chromosome pattern. In this setting, LH and FSH are not just supporting details. They help identify that the testes are not responding normally. When a younger man has low testosterone, high LH and FSH, fertility concerns, or clinical features that do not fit the usual acquired functional picture, you have to think beyond stress, weight gain, or aging. Klinefelter syndrome is one possibility. There are other inherited conditions as well. Different cause, different long-term plan. A lot of guys hear all of this and simplify it into something catchy and wrong. A few common ones. First, if I'm depressed, I probably just need testosterone. Sometimes low testosterone contributes to mood symptoms. It can improve mild depressive symptoms when hypogonadism is real and the symptoms fit the broader pattern. But testosterone is not a general treatment for major depression. If mood symptoms are severe, persistent, or dangerous, get proper mental health care. Do not outsource psychiatry to a hormone panel. Second,
One low testosterone result means I have hypogonadism. No, it means you have one low result. Diagnosis requires persistent symptoms, proper morning testing, and accurate labs. Ideally, total testosterone by LC-MS-MS, free testosterone measured directly, not estimated, and LH and FSH to classify the cause. Third, all low testosterone is treated the same way. This is the mistake I see most often. Primary hypogonadism and secondary or functional hypogonadism are not the same disease. High LH plus low testosterone points to primary hypogonadism, where the testes are failing, and TRT is usually the educational discussion there. Low or normal LH plus low testosterone points to secondary or functional hypogonadism, and if LH is below 8, enclomiphene is typically first line because it stimulates natural production, preserves fertility, and maintains testicular function. VIDMA does not prescribe TRT. We focus on the men who are appropriate candidates for enclomiphene-based care. Fourth, testosterone always causes prostate cancer or makes peeing worse. Current randomized evidence does not support either claim in appropriately selected men. Active or advanced prostate cancer is still a contraindication. Severe urinary symptoms deserve careful assessment, but the old blanket fear is outdated. Fifth, high hematocrit means immediate danger. Not exactly. Erythrocytosis is common with TRT and usually manageable. The answer is not panic. The answer is monitoring and adjustment. If you want the practical version, keep these steps in mind. Get tested correctly. Morning draw, 7 to 11. Not after a bad night, not at 4 in the afternoon, not once and never again. Do not stop at total testosterone. Get free testosterone measured accurately and always include LH and FSH. Without them, you cannot classify the problem, which means you cannot choose the right treatment. Think in syndromes, not isolated symptoms. Low mood, low libido, weaker recovery, worse body composition, poor motivation, and reduced function often travel together. But each of those can also come from other conditions, especially sleep apnea, thyroid disease, prolactin issues, depression, chronic illness, or medication effects. Match treatment to biology. If the pattern is secondary or functional hypogonadism, especially with LH below 8, enclomiphene is usually the first place to look. If erection or urinary symptoms are part of the picture too, the enclomiphene plus tadalafil combination tablet may make sense. If the pattern is primary hypogonadism, that is a different conversation entirely. That is why this series builds in order. If you skip the classification, every later decision gets shakier. Next time, we'll get into it might not be low testosterone conditions that mimic the same symptoms. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. If you've been feeling low energy or brain fog, poor sleep, low mood or motivation, weaker workouts or recovery, reduced libido or sexual performance, or unwanted body composition changes, and that sounds like you, upload your labs to VIDMA for free, or order labs through our special offer at vidma.com.